Jason Arena is the forward-thinking vice president of Nest Fresh, a trailblazer in sustainable egg production. Nest Fresh is the first in the USA to implement Inovo sexing technology. The use of this technology could see the end of the brutal practice of male chick culling, because it allows for the sex of the chick to be discovered before hatching. Nest Fresh's commitment to animal welfare sets a standard for other farmers to follow. I'm Alex Crisp, and welcome to another episode of Future of Foods Interviews. Catch all episodes on your usual podcast provider, also available on Substack and YouTube. So thank you, Jason Urena, Vice President of Nest Fresh, which is an egg company based in the USA, which has recently taken the quite pioneering step of introducing Inovo chick sexing technology. Now this technology which identifies the sex of the chick before it's born. Now, Jason, are you the first in the USA to introduce this technology?
Yes, we are. And first, thanks for having me on, Alex, to talk about this. We're really excited about Inovo sexing as a whole. I mean, I think this is really a groundbreaking technology here in the United States. I mean, this has been used in Europe for a handful of years now. But here in the United States, we will be the first brand, first egg company here in the United States in partnership with AAT and Highline of North America to implement Inovo sexing technology here in the States. And we have not only decided like we're going to help bring this technology over and give it a market for some of our product, we are actually going to be implementing it across our entire Nest Fresh brand. So our whole Nest Fresh brand will be Inovo sexed within the next 2 years.
Okay. So what exactly is the point of Inovo sexing?
So taking a step back, here in the United States, we have about 400 male chicks that are hatched every year that just go straight into euthanization. So all the egg layers that are hatched, obviously only the females lay eggs, and the males are not usable for meat purposes either. So those chicks, as soon as they're hatched, get sent down a conveyor belt basically and get euthanized on day one. Our objective, and we've been working on this for 2 years. We've taken multiple trips over to Europe, talked to many different technology people in the Inovo sexing space to try to figure out how we solve this issue here in the United States. And finally, we came to an agreement with Highline North America and to use their technology Cheggy that will be able to, you know, identify the gender very early on in the incubation process so that those chicks don't have to be hatched, don't have to be euthanized on day one.
Okay, in the incubation stage, so it's still an egg, it's before it's hatched. So how does the technology work exactly?
So there's several different Inovo sexing technologies out there, but the one that we're going to be using, like I mentioned, is named Cheggy, and that uses hyperspectral light and picture analysis to look through the eggshell, and then computers identify what the gender of that egg is or will be. And then early on in the process, those eggs are removed from the incubation process and then utilized for, you know, for other commercial things, but not sent through to hatching. So only the females will make it all the way through to hatch with a small, you know, variation. But then we take those females and send them into the barns for laying.
I mean, it must have been quite quite a task, I suppose, to watch all these small chicks going into sort of euthanasia. Is that why you decided, just because you couldn't really sort of face up to the, the practical, act of kind of euthanizing all these chicks?
And yeah, and for us here at Nest Pressure, it was like we really try to focus, and for years we've focused on animal welfare and how we can continuously take steps forward in animal welfare. My mentor and colleague now here in at Nest Fresh, Mike Sensor, tells a story of early on, and Mike's been in this industry for I think 50 years, 50 years at this point, so he's seen it all. He tells a story of him and his son and his daughter going into a hatchery one day for a tour, and his daughter asking him, "Well, Daddy, what happens to all those chicks that are going that direction? And why are they going that direction?" And he, not thinking much of it, decided to tell her, "Well, this is what's happening. Those are the male chicks. They're going over there, and they're going to be euthanized because there's no need for it." And his daughter was horrified about what was happening. And since then, Mike says he's had this in the back of his mind, like, hey, how do we solve for this issue? Now, 30, 40 years ago, there was no technology available in order to solve this issue. But once the technology did start becoming available, and it was roughly, I believe, around 2019, 2020, when these technologies first started coming out in Europe, and Mike started taking trips to try to figure out, is this possible here? And early on, we got the million reasons why this would never work here in the United States. It's too slow. Consumers don't care. All of the reasons why this would not work. But with the way we look at things from a company perspective, from a brand perspective, it's like we always like to or believe in trying to use innovation to solve these types of problems where people tell us that, they can't be done. We've done it before. I mean, we were one of the first to do cage-free in a big way here in the United States. People told us when, taking birds out of cages was crazy. We did it, and now half of the industry in the United States is cage free. When we said that we were going to let birds outside and let them roam around in pasture, and then now the pasture raised, people told us we were crazy. Now the pasture raised segment is huge. We were also the first ones to do non-GMO Project Verified eggs, and they told us that couldn't happen. So we like to really push the level of animal welfare. We like to push the levels of environmental sustainability, yes, because we believe it's the right thing to do, but also our customers believe it's the right thing to do. The people around us believe it's the right thing to do. And as not necessarily one of the biggest egg brands in the country, we feel strongly that we have to follow the guidance of our customers, the guidance of what the people out there want us to be working on, even if it's a small percentage of them, because eventually that small percentage will turn into a significant percentage from a business perspective. But it's always in doing the right thing. It's not just chasing a market. It's what is the right thing to do? And that's why we really wanted to go down this path of InnovoSexy.
So part of the reason, I mean, I wondered in the back of my mind whether there might have been the kind of tears of a child that kind of influences the kind of actions of a parent, somewhere in this. But it's also because of the 'cause you think that the market itself is becoming more kind of animal welfare conscious across the board. I mean, how do you let your consumers know that you are taking these steps to improve the lives of the chickens?
That's a great question. I think overall in the egg industry, education is a big hurdle of ours. One of the questions or comments I get most in talking to people around me is, why are eggs so confusing? There's so many different claims out there. There's, the free range, the pasture raised, the cage free, regular eggs. And a lot of times I get one or two statements. It's like, I don't know which one to choose, and I just buy the most expensive one because I feel it's probably the best. Or I don't know which one to choose, and I just buy the least expensive one because I feel like they're all relatively similar. I mean, and it doesn't have to be that way. I think that the variety that we have as an egg industry, and even for Nespresso as a brand, the different varieties that we have really are meant to line up with consumers' core values. Like, what is important to you as a person? Animal welfare, environmental sustainability, personal health and nutrition. Like, we have items for all of those different things, and we are really trying to like reinvigorate our messaging around those individual attributes of the products. We just recently rebranded our entire line. We relaunched our website. We relaunched our social media platforms, and we're trying to connect to the customer on a value level. What is important, and then we can guide you to the items that align with those individual values. For In Ovos Exing, we're going to be launching our own our cert a certification where we're partnering with Certified Humane or HFAC to have a third-party certification around our In Ovos Ex products. But we're also going to be launching a communications program to try to educate the consumer on what it is that we're actually doing and why it is important to them at the end of the day.
Okay, so you talked there about sustainability steps that you're involved with. What are they particularly?
On the sustainability side, well, I mean, you kind of take sustainability, it means different things to different people. It's kind of a broad subject, right? I mean, for us, we kind of break it up into two major buckets: the environmental sustainability and animal welfare. We believe is part of sustainability when you're talking about animal agriculture. So, animal welfare section of it that we've talked about with In Ovo, with pasture raised, with free range, those types of animal welfare levels. But on the environmental side, we were the first to launch a regenerative organic egg in the egg industry, and actually implementing regenerative organic farming practices on our farms. The point of regenerative organic farming practice is really to heal the land that we're using every day. We're trying to restore it and bring it and increase the soil health to a level where it's going to be able to not only sequester more or hold more water, increase the good bacteria that are in the soil, and then in return sequester carbon from the environment. And there's some scientists and studies out there that believe agriculture is the key to reversing some of the climate change issues. If we all implemented some level of regenerative organic practices across our farms, we could actually start reversing the impacts of climate change.
So do you think this sort of conscientious approach to sort of animal farming is something that's going to spread into other areas of farming in the USA? Is this something that you've noticed that's sort of catching on?
I think animal welfare is a big focus point on all animal agriculture. Again, because consumers are demanding it. I mean, consumers are asking for transparency. I mean, they want to see more now than ever, how their food is produced, where their food is coming from, who are the people that are actually responsible for producing their food. So I definitely see that across all different categories of food, whether it's eggs, whether it's beef, whether it's things like cereal. So that's consumers are definitely looking at all of their products now more than ever and asking the question, going back to the retailers that are selling those products, going back to the manufacturers that are producing those products, and asking these types of questions. That's something that we as brands need to be prepared to answer. These are questions that we need to be prepared to answer, and feel with where we're going as a brand, not only with our animal welfare advancements, like our Innovos Xing program, but also our regenerative organic program, where we're putting ourselves where the customer wants us to go. And again, it's always going back to the customer. Where do they want to be, and where do they want us to be?
Yeah, I mean, I suspect to some degree this type of humane farming or animal friendly farming, I suppose, has an effect on the cost of the product.
In some sense, it does. So looking at how products are produced, I mean, if you're adding different regenerative aspects to your farm. So for us, for example, we're adding different types of grass species, plant species, trees into the pasture to help the biodiversity of the roots in the soil. Those things do come at a cost. If you're letting your chickens out to be pasture raised versus being in cages on a 1 million bird complex, and the pasture raised farm only has 20,000 birds with a significantly more acreage, those things do come at a cost. But at the end of the day, even your highest cost egg out there, you take say your organic or your regenerative organic pasture raised egg on a per gram of protein, is still the cheapest protein that you can have out there. So I think that that's why consumers resonate with all of these different types of eggs and are willing to pay those premiums, because at the end of the day, what they're paying per gram of protein is still cheaper than going out and buying, say, beef or chicken in some cases.
Okay, so I mean, how do you see this developing in the future? Do you think I mean, are there further things that you wish to implement on your farm, which can improve the lives of the chickens more, or of the land that they feed from more?
Yeah, I think that we're just starting to kind of take the tip of the iceberg on some of these things. For going back to our Innovos Xing program that we're going to be launching here, we're literally just getting started. The equipment came over and is finishing being installed now. So we are actually going to be running our first eggs through the machine here in December. So we're probably three weeks away from our first run. So we'll be able to say that we have the first actual layer flock on the ground by the end of December, and then we'll have those birds moving into the layer facility. Probably sometime in April, ready to lay eggs. There's a lot of work that's going to go on between now and then going through all of our flocks with the Innovos Xing program. Hopefully, sometime by middle of 2026, we'll be able to say that we are 100% Innovos Xed as a brand. So we're right there at the tip of the ice, but we're really going to be focusing on Innovos Xing going over for the next couple of years.
Okay, so why does it take so long to sort of bring them all on onto onto the new system?
It takes time. Well, first of all, it takes about 6 months from the time of hatch for a bird to hatch and then start laying usable eggs that we can sell into retail. So it's a roughly a 6 month process. The rest of that time is the timing of being able to schedule the hatches with the hatcheries that will align with our own flock replacements. So we have a fixed number of barns that we use, and the flocks that will age out will then get replaced with these flocks that have been in ovosexed. So that whole process is probably going to take us about 18 months.
Okay, so it's okay. So in my mind, I kind of imagined that kind of any chicken could lay an egg, and that egg would go through this machine, and the machine would see the kind of embryo inside and kind of define and decide what sex it was. But it's more complicated than that, is it?
Yeah, so really the technology is computer based, where, like you mentioned, the eggs are going to go into that machine, get a bunch of images taken from it, and then it gets identified as one or the other, male or female. And then at that point it finishes out the incubation process. From there, that's the not the Not the easy part, but that's the shorter of the time frames. From there, you have to then find the barns to put those eggs in. Those barns already have flocks that are there laying eggs. So we're not going to remove any of those flocks early in order to bring in these in ovo sexed flocks. We're going to let those flocks lay out their full life cycle. And then once we're ready to transition them on their normal time, we will bring in those in ovo sex flocks right behind them.
Okay, so there's a hatchery, there's a central hatchery, and you take your chickens there to lay. Is that about
So
right?
the eggs that go to hatch all go to central hatcheries. Yeah, there's a handful of hatcheries scattered across the United States that
Okay.
supply the roughly 300 million plus chicks, baby chicks every year that lay eggs for consumption here in the United States. So we go to the hatchery, and in this case, we partnered with Highline North America, that's going to be our hatchery, where they hatch all the chicks for us. And then when we get the chicks from them, we have a network of family farms all over the country. I mean, we have the individual farmers that have anywhere between 10,000 birds to potentially 25,000, 30,000 birds on their farm. So we send those chicks from the hatchery out to all of those farms, whether it be up in the Midwest, in Iowa, Wisconsin, or down in our farms that we own in Texas, or out to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And
How
that's
and
where
how
our eggs get laid, where we take then the eggs from all of those farms, from all those individual family farmers, and bring them into our processing plants to get cleaned, packed, sorted, and then eventually sent out to retailers.
I see. Okay. I sort of understand that a little bit better now. So how many hens do you have at sort of Nest Fresh? How many do you look after? Or how many are you in charge of, I should say?
Between our farmer contracts and our own production, we are roughly a little bit over 2 million specialty egg layers. So what I consider, free range, pasture raised, and above.
Yeah, and you said you went over to Europe to kind of learn about this technology. Is it sort of France and Germany are the main countries in Europe dealing with this, aren't they?
Yeah, so France and Germany were the first two to actually implement legislation to ban male chick culling as a practice. So there in Europe is really where this technology, ovosexing technology, developed. So Mike Sensor and myself have taken trips over to Europe to see these different technologies actually in the working phases, to try to decide like what can we use here, what would work here. Is one of the major hurdles here was the speed of the technologies. We have more layer flocks here in the United States per capita than are actually in Europe. So the size of these different technologies were scaled for kind of European hatcheries. We needed to find a technology that would be able to scale up to be fast enough to work well within the hatcheries that we have here in the United States. We needed about 20,000 eggs per hour of capacity in order for the run rates at our current hatcheries to not be totally constrained, because we didn't want to try to solve one problem and create another one by creating a bottleneck at the hatcheries. So that's why we finally landed on, once we saw the Cheggy in action, we landed on working with AAT and Cheggy to bring that technology over, because that can do 20,000 eggs an hour while it still slows down the process at the hatchery. It moves enough eggs through the process quick enough where it doesn't add an immense constraint. So that is what we decided to go with, and why we took all those trips over to Europe, because we really needed to make sure that it was going to be a solution that worked for how we were doing things here in the United States.
Yeah, and then you had to ship all the machines over by boat, I imagine. Is that right?
They all came over in container vessels. I think they landed here end of October. Nothing happens quickly, right?
No.
The equipment had to be manufactured, had to be shipped here. From October to now, we've been running through the installation process, doing a series of tests, making sure that all of the equipment is working properly. And now finally, in a couple of weeks here, I believe by December 12th, we will be actually able to use the machines in its full capacity and run the first block through it.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I only discovered this practice of sort of male chick culling about 6 months ago, and I was pretty kind of horrified by it. So I suppose it's been a well kept secret in the egg industry. But I'm glad that people like you are kind of setting a new standard now.
Well, I mean, you're not alone, so don't feel bad. I mean, there's roughly from studies, only about 5 to 10% of the U.S. population that really really knows what happens to the male chicks after they're hatched. The vast majority of people, I actually think that the male chicks are hatched and raised right along with the female chicks in the laying barns. But that's just not the case. And that talks to also speaks to the market that is going to be available out there for products that come out of in ovo sexed layer flocks. Because once people understand, in that same study, and the 90% people that didn't know what happened to the male chicks, about 50% of them, after finding out what happened to the male chicks, said absolutely they would be extremely interested in egg products from in ovo sex flock layer flocks. So they saw it as a great solution to that and to that problem. So it is interesting how consumers now think about their food, where it comes from, how it's produced, and as they're almost being reintroduced to farming and animal agriculture. Because over generations, as more and more people have moved away from rural areas into cities, into suburbs, we've kind of been disconnected with our food and the whole process of how food gets from somewhere like a farm to a supermarket. So it's almost been over this last decade or so, a reintroduction of people, into how the animal agriculture and then the food space really works.
Yeah, well, I suppose a lot of things are happening in this space now, aren't they? So, I mean, factory farming, especially in the USA, is producing the majority of food that people eat. But also, there are now alternatives which are kind of quickly coming onto, well, not necessarily onto the market quickly, but they are coming onto the market. There are companies that can make egg-like products, which don't need chicken through sort of precision fermentation and that sort of technology. Do you think this is making people? I mean, obviously, it's sort of changing the kind of competitive element of kind of delivering food for people, isn't it?
There's a lot of products coming onto the market, whether it's in the egg space or whether it's in meats or other types of dairy, milk, butter, that type of stuff that is an alternative to actual like animal production. I think that while there's been a lot of advancement and a lot of development in that area, consumers still like have a tendency to want products that are actually produced from animal agriculture. Like the consumers are looking at an egg substitute in an egg and still predominantly leaning, saying like we want to consume real eggs. In the milk space is the same way. And actually, the milk space developed faster than the egg space in like in an alternative way. So we saw a big movement in dairy towards dairy alternatives, whether that's soy, whether that's almond, whether that's oat, all these different things. And now we're starting to see in dairy a shift back towards actual animal produced dairy, full fat milks and things like that. But now consumers, in order to shift back, they're asking for that level of transparency. They're asking for animal agriculture to do things in a better way, or in a way that they feel better about consuming those products, because the alternatives haven't given the delivered on the flavor profiles. The alternatives haven't delivered on the nutritional basis of some of these animal produced products. And instead of eliminating animal production altogether, consumers are really looking at like how can we do this, or how can we consume a better product? And that's forcing us as manufacturers and forcing us as brands to really look at our practices and our business and say, well, consumers are still saying, hey, we want your products, but do it better. All right, well, let's figure out how we go back and do that better. And
And do you
that's
think
how
this
we got
is,
to where we are today.
yeah, and do you think this is going to, I mean, do you think there's a chance that this could also kind of leak into other areas, livestock farming in the USA, like sort of beef farming and pork and that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that all of these different segments are looking at what they can do, excuse me, to kind of fight off some of these pressures that they would eventually see from alternative products. So there, I think that it's definitely going to spread throughout the U.S. animal agriculture industry, and we're already seeing it. I mean, we're seeing pasture raised not only in eggs, but we're seeing it in beef, we're seeing it in poultry, grass fed, the same thing across all kinds of dairy, beef. We're seeing animal welfare practices elevate across the whole spectrum. And again, it's because consumers are demanding it. And it's also as information is more readily available. I mean, it seems like every year it becomes easier and easier to find information out there for a consumer to jump on a computer or on their phone and ask these tough questions of brands, and not only ask these tough questions of brands, but then use their social media platforms to say like, hey, look at, brand A is not doing things the way that we feel like they should be doing it, but look at brand B that is do that is or are doing things in a better way, that are raising the bar and pushing things forward. So the additional communication, the additional information, like transparency that we have nowadays, has really put manufacturers in a position where like you have to do the right thing. I mean, I come from a company like Nestfresh that has always strived and really always pushed, regardless of who's asking us to do it, to do the right things. But this is really making a lot of companies take hard looks at the way that they produce and the way that they bring products to market, because eventually consumers are going to see through smoke and mirrors if that's all that you're out there trying to sell.
Yeah, I suppose the practices of rogue farmers, rogue egg producers, milk producers, beef producers is being more and more exposed in the media, and so people have to account for their actions. But with the population and demand increasing, it's going to be hard to supply and also kind of keep animal welfare in mind. Do you think, with that in mind, do you think there's a place in the future for sort of precision fermentation and sort of cultivated meat and kind of cultivated dairy, sort of cellular agriculture?
I've always been a big proponent of options. I mean, I think that there is a place for alternatives to animal agriculture. I think that whether it's driven by the increased population, increased demand, or just pure, consumer desire and will, I think that being able to give the consumers all of the options that we can viably give them, and then letting the consumer make the choice, whether it's what type of egg they want, if it's cage free or regenerative organic pasture raised, or whether it's an egg versus an egg alternative, or a beef steak or a meat alternative, the consumer will make the decision at the end of the day which way they want to go. We're going to experience a bunch of different challenges going forward over the next 15, 20, 30 years as a global population. So having those options is only going to give us more tools at our disposal on how we can meet those challenges. And some of those challenges we can't even think about today. So always being on that forefront will give us that kind of step up going into tomorrow to figure out how we're going to solve tomorrow's problems when we don't even know what they are yet. So I definitely think there's a space. Now, I also think that there is a lot of, well, we talk about the land or the amount of space that it takes to feed this, in the United States, or to feed people globally. I mean, at least here in the United States, I do still feel strongly that there is plenty of room for expansion on some of these animal agriculture products. But again, options are always good to me.
Well, it's very interesting to get a farmer's perspective on. I mean, obviously, the USA approved cultivated chicken to be sold there. So I kind of wonder what the what people think about this. So I mean, you said that you're happy for people to have options and alternatives. I wonder, you amongst you and your friends in this space, what is the sort of general idea of cultivated chicken?
I mean, there's a lot of different feelings about it. I don't think anybody has a unified like idea about it. There's obviously people that welcome some level of competition. There's others that say that this is it's blasphemy. It should never be done for all kinds of different reasons. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think competition is healthy. I think that bringing new ideas to the table is an absolutely healthy practice to do, no matter what industry that you're in. And at the end of the day, whether we believe that cultivated chicken should be allowed to be sold or not, it's going to make us better, or it's going to make us better as an industry. It's going to make animal agriculture, which I'm a part of, better, because it's going to continue to push us. It's going to continue to push us to look at things in different ways. It's going to continue to push us to look at, okay, well, what problem is that solving over there? Whether it's cultivated chicken or whether whatever innovation's coming, what problem is that solving? And then how can we then address those issues within our own industry, within our own practices? What can we develop to also address that consumer concern? Because if we can do that, then then consumers will still stay on our side of the line. We have to have this feeling, and this is how we look at things from NestFresh, is we have to constantly be winning consumers. We have to constantly be winning back our customers. We can't take for granted, just because they've bought our product for a year or 2 years, that they're going to buy our product for the rest of their lives just because we leave it the same. People over their lifetime change, their value sets change. We talked about, we don't know what kind of problems or what kind of issues that we're going to have to find solutions for 10 to 15 years from now. So we have to constantly be or stay engaged and stay in touch with our consumers so that we can better fit their evolving values, and we have to constantly be winning them back. And to me, competition only helps push us in that right direction, instead of allowing anybody to like just stay stagnant in what they're doing. That's the whole beauty about competition.
I suppose agriculture in all its forms has always had to adopt and adapt new technology when it comes along in order to stay relevant. So it's refreshing to hear that you are sort of open to progress, and not only that you welcome it. You seem to have a very healthy attitude to that. So
I mean,
it sounds good
technology is
to me.
always going to be our friend. We have to implement new technology. We have to be willing to have an open mind about how we're going to use it. And just because it's new, just because it's scary maybe sometimes, it doesn't mean that we should just push it off to the side and ignore it. Because eventually, if we ignore things long enough, then it will pass us by. So we have to be open to looking at that. And we for our the lifespan of our brand and our company, we've always been that way. We've always tried to push those limits, over this 20 plus years that the brand has been around. And I don't see that changing going forward.
No. Well, you can't stop progress, can you? That's what they say.
Very
And
true.
if I was going to be an egg laying chicken, I think I'd probably quite like to do it on one of your farms, by the sounds. That's good. And so, Jason, it's been very lovely talking to you. Thank you for coming on Future Foods interviews. I'm very interested to see where this industry goes and what happens next. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you having me on and allowing us to talk a little bit about what we're doing here on the NestFresh side with our Innovus Xink program. That'll be launching in second quarter of 2025, and all the regenerative stuff that we're doing with our new barn brand. So it's been a great conversation. I've had a good time, so thank you.
Thank you very much.